Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcioland Podcast of the Week. And today's episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game. I hope you guys all checked out the game they launched for the Champions League, that you picked your squads for that. They also have, of course, fantasy football games for Premier League, La Liga, Serie A. And also, it's a great place to read a lot of articles. You can read Chloe Beresdorf previewing the Fiorentina-Spal match. You can read John Solano talking about the crisis at Roma. And today I wrote an article on Allegri's growing influence at Juve. So today's podcast, I'm actually in Austria getting ready to return to Boston today. Alex did a great job with an interview with Thomas from Everything is Football that you can hear in the second part of the podcast. And then, of course, today we have our game picks with our great friend Thousand Names in Italy. But before we get to that, I'm joined by our great friend, co-producer, co-host Alex Goldberg. We want to chat a little bit about the Champions League, and I want to be honest with you guys, because of my trip, I haven't been able to watch as many games as I would like. So we're kind of going to talk big picture more. So Alex, there was a couple of topics that I want to hit up with you. We had Inter's return to the Champions League after a six-year absence, that match against Spurs. On Twitter, it was very interesting to see the different reactions. Of course, Premier League fans took it as an opportunity to make fun of Spurs being typical bottlers. In Italy, it was more about, you know, gritty comeback win, typical Italian style, maybe not beautiful, but in the end, the team with the most grit won. So I wanted to get your take on this, Alex. You follow the Premier League much closer than I. You're becoming a big Serie A expert with the podcast. So give me your take on the game. Do you think it's a little bit of both, or it's more one take than the other?
Honestly, if I were to take, and I watched the whole game, but if I were to not watch the game, David, and just see the result, I think my analysis would be just as accurate. Because, as you said, Premier League fans really know that Spurs, they just bottle things. They just do. It's what they do. They are a very good team on paper. They didn't make many summer acquisitions. In fact, they made zero, David. But in my opinion, their acquisition of Lucas Moura last year in January was kind of a summer acquisition. But on paper, they're a good team. Christian Eriksen's a really damn good player. Harry Kane, they got a lot of good players. However, they bottle things. And on the other side, there's Inter, who clearly, it's no secret, we've talked about it a lot. They have been very underwhelming. It's been very tough, in my opinion, for Spalletti to figure out his best team. They were down, and then they come back, and they really win in very dramatic fashion, you could say. My big takeaway, and where I'm impressed by Inter, so to answer your question, I still think it was more about Spurs bottling it, but where I was impressed with Inter is the fact that Icardi scored. I think Icardi scoring could signal a really nice trend of things to come here for Inter. It's no secret. He's definitely their most talented player, at least attacker-wise. His goal was a golazo. It was really, really impressive. So to get him on the score sheet, I think might be just more symbolism of what could be to come. I still think it's going to be a headache, at least occasionally, for Spalletti to figure out, okay, who do I play? Is it Politano, Nainggolan, Perisic, Kondreva, Keita Balde? So I definitely think there still are some headaches that Spalletti will have to figure out, but I still think it was encouraging. You got your best player on the score sheet. Kwadwo Asamoah had a nice game. De Vrij had a nice game. So those are two new acquisitions that were pretty solid. So I think it's more Spurs bottling it, but I definitely think Inter can be confident that there were some positives to truly take away from that match.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of that. For me, I mean, my first reaction to the match is, boy, that I miss not seeing and especially hearing San Siro in a big Champions League match. When they did the Champions League anthem, it almost gave me goosebumps. That stadium was just on fire. And then for such a great comeback win, I mean, what a stage. I agree with you. I could see this like really helping Inter start to turn their season around. They definitely needed that. I think, you know, had they been a draw, the crisis talk would still be going on. Had they lost, boy, that really would have been a big problem. I definitely agree with you. What a moment for Icardi, his first Champions League match. What a goal. And Vecino, man, he is just knows when to come through in the most clutch moments. The reason Inter was even in that game to begin with was his last-minute goal against Lazio, and he did it again in the first match. So good for them. They definitely needed a win. It's a tough group. They started, you know, the draw in the fourth seed in the pot. They got a tough group, but definitely a great start there. Now let's flip the topic. Let's talk a little bit about Juve. I have to tell you, I had to write a big note to myself to say Valencia. I swear to God, I'm very dyslexic. For some reason, I always confuse Valencia and Sevilla. So I have to make a big note to myself to say Valencia. If you hear me say Sevilla, I can't blame it on jet lag. This is just a glitch in my mind. So I have to say that match really impressed me, because I have to say the old Juve, even I could have seen them going in for that match, going for a draw. And instead, you know, they won the match despite the Cristiano Ronaldo red card. So give me your take on what you saw there. What was your impression of that?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to take a similar approach to this. Once again, I definitely flipped around on Wednesday, but I still watch, especially via highlights, a large majority of the match. But if I didn't, David, and you told me Juve are away and Ronaldo got a red card early, yet they win 2-0, that's really impressive, and that is really credit to Allegri. But you mentioned old Juve. In my eyes, I look at the defense in this game, and they were great. You talked about on the last episode how Bonucci defensively has not been too hot to start the year. I thought he was very good. I thought Chiellini was very good. I thought João Cancelo was very good. Alexandro, who I rate, I think was the worst of the defenders, but still not deplorable. Szczęsny was very good. So I think there was a lot of identity there that we're used to with Juventus in that game. They certainly were sturdy. And yeah, Ronaldo, the red card, it can be debated for a while. I mean, it feels like all of Juve's red cards or actions these days are very debatable, obviously with Douglas Costa on Sunday. But the fact that the front three was not great, Ronaldo getting the red card, but Mandzukic wasn't great. I thought Bernardeschi was good, so I can't say the whole front three wasn't great. But I thought this was way more typical Juve. I thought the fact that they won 2-0 away after getting a red card, their defense has to be good, and it was good. So I think that's encouraging as well, because, yes, I know Juventini want the style of play to improve. They want to think that, okay, we have Ronaldo, we have Dybala, we have Douglas Costa, we have Bernardeschi, we should just be scoring 5-6 goals. But when you have a sturdy defense, it really allows you to get a little bit more creative as the season goes on. And I thought Bonucci was really good, Chiellini was really good, and if the spine of your defense is good, you really have a lot to build on. So I was really impressed with Juventus winning 2-0 on the road after a red card.
Yeah, I have to say this feels like a really different Juve in the Champions League. Again, had you told me Ronaldo got a red card, I would have been like, oh, they'd be lucky to get away with this draw. They won pretty decisively. They just look like such a solid squad. I even had a chuckle when I saw this video that I saw on Twitter after Mourinho and that thing with Ronaldo. Then he sees Mandzukic and Emre Can, like these two huge dudes running at him. I'd be like, oh my God, I'd be scared to death. This just feels like a different Juve. I'm just going to say it. If they don't win the Champions League, it's going to feel really disappointing. It's such a high bar, but I feel like they really have everything that you need. I think to me, this was another huge victory for Max Allegri. Look, you know, we can debate all day. Is he getting the most out of all his offensive weapons? I'm a big Allegri defender, but I'd concede you could probably get more out of it. But man, the guy is just a tactical genius, how he flipped that match around. And look, granted, Valencia isn't the biggest team to face or whatnot, but again, this is just a different Juve from years past. So let's see if they can build on this, but I think this was certainly a really big win for them. To piggyback on Juve, now Douglas Costa looks like he's going to be out for a little while. Cristiano Ronaldo, we'll have to see how long the suspension is in the Champions League, but they are still so stacked up front right now that I can feel they can ride this out anyways. So that certainly a good week overall for the Italian teams in Europe. Napoli didn't win. They had a, you know, I didn't watch any of the match, I'll be very honest. It looks overall they had a good performance but weren't able to win. I'm not sure if they'll be able to get out of this group. Now they're really behind the eight ball there. I don't think anyone expected much from Roma in the match against Real Madrid. I felt like starting Zaniolo was a desperate move, but I think it was a desperate move that was needed. I think, you know, maybe it sends a message to the other players. I feel like Di Francesco had nothing to lose anyways, so I was pretty intrigued by that. So I know there's big debates on Roma right now, so I'm curious to see what happens there. But overall, you have to be pretty happy with how things went, too, with Milan and Lazio winning in the Europa League.
Yeah, absolutely. And to get back to Allegri, this definitely helps the narrative of saying maybe he's not the best manager in the world, but in my opinion, he's certainly the most versatile manager in the world. So, David, we do this always, usually on Thursday. We're doing it on Friday, but we have a weekend of Serie A coming up. So we got to get to our game picks with you and Thousand Names. So what do we got?
All right, so first of all, I have to say the few things that crack me up, than getting tweets from Juve fans asking me what the hell am I thinking, having Thousand Names picking on the podcast. And I think by now you guys know that he isn't completely serious with his game picks, but sometimes he really comes up with some pretty brilliant predictions. So I think by now all our listeners are used to the drill. Thousand Names sends me three games. He picks them. He picks the matches. He sends me his picks, and then I make my own picks. So he has the advantage of picking the games, and I have the advantage of knowing what he's going to pick to make my own. So as usual, we have great friends in Italy who love hearing what Thousand Names does. He does these predictions exclusively for us on Calciolan, so I'll read them in Italian as well. The first one, very intriguing match. We talked a little bit about this in the earlier episode this week, and this is Inter traveling to Genova to face Sampdoria. So Thousand Names has Inter winning 1-0 on the road, goal by Skriniar, and he says the former Samp player is going to punish Giampaolo, who as usual is going to mail it in when he faces Inter. And he says the win on Wednesday is the big turnaround for Inter, and now the realistic objective is the Scudetto. So in Italian, Samp Inter 0-1, Skriniar. L'ex punisce Giampaolo, che quando vede Inter si scansa. Dopo l'impresa di mercoledì è svoltata la stagione. Obiettivo scudetto. So, as I mentioned on Tuesday when we recorded, Sampdoria is one of the best home teams in Serie A. They crushed Napoli. Napoli's won all their other matches. They went to Genova. They had a very tough one. So, here's the deal. I am almost tempted to pick Samp to win outright, but I am a little bit cautious. For one, Inter played on Tuesday. They had time to rest. Samp made up their match against Fiorentina on Wednesday. One less day rest. I think Inter has a lot of momentum after that win. So as tempted as I am to pick Samp to win, I'm going to have it 1-1, and I'm going to give a goal to Caprari, who's been on great form. And I'm going to have Icardi getting on the score sheet in Serie A against his former team. So next match picked by our friend, Thousand Names, Milan-Atalanta. He has a 2-0, goals by Caldara and Higuain. His comment is that Gasperini has completely lost the pulse of his team and that Gattuso is going to win thanks to the usual help from the referees. In Italian, Milan-Atalanta 2-0, Caldara-Higuain, Gasperini ha perso la squadra di mano, Gattuso vince col solito aiutino arbitrale. So this is a other tough match because Milan played yesterday against a team of like almost an amateur side, almost semi-professional team. They won 1-0. There was a decent amount of turnover, but Higuain and Romagnoli still started. Gattuso brought in some other starters in the second half to ensure they won the match. We've talked about it on Tuesday. Atalanta is really a very tough start to the season. So I'm not going to have Milan winning 2-0. I'm still going to give a win to Milan because I am concerned about Atalanta. So I'm going to say 1-0, and I'm going to give a goal to Suso. So this is an interesting match. I don't feel great about this pick because Milan, there are some reasons to concern. But again, they were using a lot of their bench players yesterday. And there's definitely a big drop-off from the starters to the bench players. Last match picked by our friend Thousand Names, Torino-Napoli. He has it, Napoli winning 1-0. One goal by my boy Milik. And the comment is, Mazzarri is going to give 3 key points to his further team. And the Granata fans, and that's the name of the Torino fans, are going to celebrate because Napoli is going to join Juve at the top of the standing. And that the Cuore Toro, which is, you know, the heart of Torino, is being stomped upon because the fans are celebrating Napoli catching up to their crosstown rivals Juve. In Italian, Torino-Napoli 0-1, Milik. Mazzarri regala 3 punti d'oro alla sua ex squadra. Pubblico Granata in festa per aggancio alla Juve. Cuore Toro calpestato. Now, I have to say, I've been underrating Torino all season. I atoned for my sins after I watched their match against Udinese. I had picked Udinese to win last week. Torino definitely deserved to win. Now, look, Torino does have some injuries. Iago Falque, a player we talk a lot about on the podcast, is hurt. But they are deep enough that now they're going to be able to start the duo Zaza-Belotti. They do have still some intriguing wing players, even Berenguer, who joined the team last year. So I'm going to have it as a draw. I'm going to have it 1-1, and I'm going to give a goal to Belotti, and I'm going to agree with Thousand Names with a goal by Milik. A couple of other matches in Serie A I wanted to bring to your attention. A match really important for both teams, Bologna-Roma. I've talked about it on Tuesday. I think Bologna is in a lot of trouble this season. If you told me right now that they could get relegated at the end of the season, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. We know all about Roma's struggles. Bologna's at home. Both teams desperately need a result. Bologna has just 1 point. There's been a lot of controversy at Roma. I saw Kluivert's not too happy that he wasn't even on the bench for the match against Real Madrid. Let's see what happens there. Another intriguing match is we have Fiorentina, who was everyone's darling before they lost to Napoli, and there's nothing wrong to losing at the San Paolo just by 1-0. They play at home against Spal, who so far has stolen the title of Queen of the Provinciale from Atalanta. So that should be an intriguing match. You should look out for that. Then we have Lazio playing at home against Genoa. Lazio played a decent amount of their starters yesterday in the Europa League. Genoa has the on-fire striker Piatek. Let's see if he can keep it up there. And then we have the final match on Sunday, the 8:30 match in Serie A, Frosinone-Juve. So let's see what happens there. So before I turn it over, Alex is going to do a fantastic interview with our friends with Everything is Football, an account you definitely should check out on Twitter. I want to take this opportunity to thank our listeners who support the podcast. Since I've been in Europe, we didn't do listener questions. I have to tell you, I'm really looking forward to that. You guys know that's one of my favorite segments of the podcast. So if you have questions and you've been having them locked and loaded, you can tweet them at us with the Calcioland hashtag. We'll get to them the first episode of next week. I look forward to that. I also want to thank everyone who supports the podcast. We rely on you not only to help me co-write the podcast, but also to promote what we do. We love when people tweet about the podcast. I saw a lot of people also enjoyed our chat on movies with our friend Andrew Barker. So if you like what you hear, tell your friends. It's very easy on Twitter. That really helps us. And I want to give a big thank you to people who leave reviews on iTunes. Really, really easy way to support the podcast. There's a reason almost every podcast that you hear asks their listeners to leave reviews. They really help with rankings or whatnot. The reviews keep coming in. It takes 2 seconds to give us a 5-star rating. Just look for Calcioland on iTunes, scroll down, tap on 5 stars. That's a big way to help us. And I really mean it when I say I read, and Alex does too, I read all the comments that people leave for us. We had a very good one, the last one, at least here in the U.S., someone that says they love the podcast, but they feel that we almost on purpose don't talk a lot about Juve. And I think there's a little bit of truth to that. There's a couple of reasons for that. A, I feel like there's a lot of Juve content out there, and I really want to try to promote Calcio as a whole. We have a lot of listeners that aren't necessarily huge Serie A fans, and we're really trying to change the perception that Serie A is just a one-team league. But I do think it's a pretty fair comment. We don't have, surprisingly, as many Juve guests as some other teams. So we're going to have our friend Adam Digby on pretty soon to make up for that. But as always, please leave the reviews. Please leave us comments. Look, you leave constructive comments. Trust me, we are going to take action on those. So I want to thank you guys for the support, and I'm going to turn it over to Alex for the rest of the podcast.
All right. And for the interview segment of this episode, I am really overdue, I would say, in talking to these guys on some type of a platform, and I'm happy it's on Calcioland. We have Everything is Football, a very, very good and popular Twitter account that really covers, I would say, everything in Europe. And they're just opinions and analysis are always kind of, in my opinion, spot on. But nonetheless, they really are good. They really do their homework. They're very objective. And it's just a real pleasure to finally be able to speak to them on this podcast. And it's run by a handful of people who actually kind of a cool story. And we'll actually get the real story at the end of this interview. But couple high school friends made this account not too long ago, and it really has turned into, in my opinion, one of the better Twitter accounts on the platform. And I'm really happy to be joined by one of the people that runs the account, Thomas Horsell. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me on Calcioland.
No, thank you so much for having me, Alex, and thank you so much for the kind words, man. I mean, it's not every day that we hear that we're an objective account from a lot of the heated Barca fans on Twitter, as you might have seen. So, you know, it's always good to hear that once in a while, but really, really appreciate you having me on, and a big fan of yours and David's work here in Couchland.
Awesome. Well, yeah, you're objective in my eyes, so I don't really care about other people's opinions. So, Thomas, it's no mystery. This is definitely a Serie A podcast first and foremost. So we are going to start off with Serie A, as you have knowledge of many, many different leagues. And I'm definitely going to ask you a couple questions here at the top that David has asked me on the podcast previously and that we've even asked our guests. And if we're starting with Serie A, we got to start off with the old lady, the dominant team of Serie A. Thomas, Juventus are off to a perfect start this season. As you know, they even won their Champions League game this week. Yet they honestly haven't looked that good for their roster or for their standard. So I want to ask you, should they be encouraged by the perfect start because they haven't looked good and they're still at a perfect start? Or should they just be worried about how they've looked?
I think first and foremost, I've always been a big fan of the saying that, you know, if you're winning, that's first and foremost what matters. It doesn't matter if you're winning ugly. And honestly, if you're not playing well and still winning, that's really what matters even more. Because you're always going to be able to figure things out, fix things. With Juve, I mean, Allegri knows the team. It's a team that's been clicking for years now. And, you know, it might not click right off the bat. He's had to make some changes, obviously, with the big boy Ronaldo coming in. But I think overall, once he gets the team he wants week in, week out, I think Juve will be rolling. And if they can keep picking up points while not playing at their best, then, you know, even better. It just comes down to Allegri now really finding his best formation, Ronaldo getting as sharp as possible, and really, at the end of the day, maybe the Dybala situation getting resolved, which almost feels like we talk about every season, Alex, but it's almost always seems to stay the same.
Great segue there, Thomas. I got to ask you, definitely, as you said, Allegri will figure out the formation. And if you're winning, you're winning. And David talks about it a lot on this podcast. Juve are not used to playing their best football at the beginning of the season anyway. But you bring up Paulo Dybala. And that is kind of the one big question mark I do have on Juve this year. He's clearly one of the top talents in Serie A. Yet he's off to a slow start this year. He's not even getting all the starts. And he also doesn't get much shine for Argentina. And of course, they are very deep attacking-wise. But still, as good as he is, he doesn't get much shine for Argentina, and this also isn't the first year for Juve that at times he's been benched. As good as he is, Allegri doesn't necessarily play him as much as some superstars get played. So do you think we're overrating him a bit, or is he just in two isolated situations where he doesn't get to shine as much?
I think with Dybala, he's one of those players that, you know, he's very suited to specific systems, but he's not a player who you really can say, you know, would just walk into any team because of systems, not because he's not a good enough player. I mean, Dybala is one of the few players who's played with both Messi and Ronaldo now, but somehow it seems that he doesn't really fit with either one. You know, he famously said for Argentina that he's not sure if he can really play with Messi. We know how that turned out. You know, not a smart thing to say in Argentina. And now with Ronaldo, obviously he hasn't said anything, and I think he can play with Ronaldo, but so far it seems like Allegri hasn't found out how he wants to solve that problem. And you know, we talk about Dybala, he's about to turn 25. He's not no longer a young player. So many people keep saying, oh, Dybala's young, you know. And yeah, well, he's not old. He's, you know, he's 25 now. So he's been around for a while. So there has to be a point where we say that Dybala either, you know, either Juventus need to find a way to have Dybala in the lineup every week or try to move him on because they can get way too much money for someone like him, man, to just have him on the bench.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, 25, sure, it's young in normal years, but in the world of football, especially for how long Dybala's been on the scene, you're right, it really isn't that young. And I definitely thought at this point he would be more in the conversation for top five in the world. I really did. I always thought it was ridiculous when people made Messi comparisons. Really, the only comparisons are they're both Argentines, they're both short, and they're both lefties. But beyond that, that was ridiculous. But I am surprised he hasn't hit the ground running a little bit more. And I do think personally that the chemistry will happen with Ronaldo. But then again, it's all up to Allegri. So it's definitely an interesting storyline to keep track of. So, Thomas, let's move away from Juve, but stay in Serie A. A very popular topic right now, but especially during the summer, was the summer that Inter had. They had a very impressive summer transfer market. So many people, not on this podcast and on this podcast, picked them to finish second place in Serie A. So at this point, they really are struggling. They only have 4 points. Yes, there haven't been that many games, but they really haven't looked great. They did win the other day in the Champions League. But overall, they really have been underwhelming. Yet I thought they were going to be really good with the pieces they acquired. Should there be cause for concern, in your opinion?
I'm like you, Alex, because when we look at what Milan did last summer, and they brought in a bunch of players, and we kept saying it was kind of like Everton. They're bringing in a lot of players, but not a lot of quality. With Inter Milan, they were bringing in quality this summer, and you just thought, you know, Spalletti is going to get it right. It's going to kick off right off the bat. And Lautaro Martinez, who I'm a massive fan of, for those who don't know, I'm Brazilian, so I follow South American football very closely, and I've watched a lot of Lautaro Martinez in the Libertadores. And before he came over, I said, well, this guy, you know, he's the next great striker we're going to see in Europe coming from South America. Unfortunately, he's injured right now. He's about to come back. But for me, Alex, the cause for concern right now is kind of like how, you know, Allegri doesn't really know his best team yet, his best starting 11. I feel like Spalletti also doesn't know his best starting 11 and isn't really sure what formation and he really wants to play week in, week out. We've seen him use a few different ones this season. So while they don't vary that much, we've seen like a 4-2-3-1, we've seen a 4-4, you could say, with Lautaro playing off of Icardi 1-1 before Lautaro got injured. But at the end of the day, Spalletti has to figure it out. Like I said of Juventus, I think Inter will figure it out, and I think they will run Juve a little closer than some people think after the way they started the season.
Yeah, they still have the team to certainly make an impressive surge up the charts. I still think they have it in them, but I was so, so disheartened by their 1-0 loss to Parma at the weekend at the San Siro. I really didn't see that coming. But, hey, maybe I'm being a prisoner of the moment. They certainly do have an impressive squad. So I want to talk about, originally I was saying Inter would be second in Serie A this year, but now I've very quickly flipped the script, Thomas, and I'm right back to saying I think it's going to be Napoli. Overall, Napoli have been pretty solid. They got spanked by Sampdoria a couple weeks ago, but other than that, they've been great. They lost Sarri and Jorginho. That's no mystery. But overall, do you think they're still Juve's biggest challenger?
I personally think that once Inter kick it on, I think they'll be Juve's biggest challenger. Having said that, I think Ancelotti probably was as good a guy as you could have gotten, you know, replacing Sarri. Very different style nowadays. We see that, you know, when Ancelotti came into Napoli, he said that he's going to try to keep things mostly the same while, you know, implementing a bit of his own style. And we've seen him do that so far. I think the issue of Juve with Napoli, obviously, beyond having lost Sarri and losing Jorginho now, is how are they going to replace that dynamic? Well, we've seen Hamsik dropping a lot deeper this season. But we've also seen Zielinski, who Mark, my usual co-host in the EIF podcast, he was highlighting this a few days ago. Just Zielinski's role this season has really, really improved. And I think with Zielinski, if he can play at a high level, Alex, I think that Napoli can really give Juve a run for their money. And if not Juve, I think them and Inter really will fight it out for second place. And, you know, it's anyone's for the taking.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Zielinski so far this season. Obviously, he played big hero at the start of the season. Been really impressed continuously with Lahn, who I think David and I both rate as one of the top midfielders in Serie A. So Ancelotti's no slouch. Everybody knows that. So as much as Sarri and Jorginho were kind of their identity, they still have so much cohesion. And at this point, for me, I would now bet that Napoli are going to be second. But as you said, Inter could definitely get there. But Napoli just still look like such a solid bet, such a tough team to beat. So, Thomas, I want to talk about a player now, not a team, that has been such talk of not just this podcast, and rightfully so, but such talk of, if anybody's looking at the next big star, which I love doing, it's so much fun. I think a lot of people love doing it. And we're always talking about pure attackers with a Kylian Mbappe and Neymar, Ousmane Dembele, but kind of the consensus next star in the midfield, at least for all of last year and at least heading into the World Cup, was Milinkovic-Savic of Lazio. He had a tremendous year last year, really had a good year the year before. He wasn't as much on the map, but admittedly, he has definitely been struggling since the World Cup. I think his World Cup performance was a little overblown. It wasn't as bad as some people said. I think he was pretty good in the first game. But overall, not a great World Cup and a very poor start to the season. What is your take on Milinkovic-Savic? Is he not as good as some people thought?
I'm a big fan of Savic's. I started watching Lazio as much as I could last season, specifically to watch as much of Savic as possible. I think he's still quite a top prospect. I think the big issue here is the fact that people were talking about, you know, teams paying 100 million, 150 million for him when he's not that good, you know. And obviously the transfer market's inflated nowadays. Everyone's going for crazy prices. But when you talk about a player of that price tag that early on, and it just puts so much pressure. We saw the World Cup. Like you said, it wasn't as bad as people said it was. I agree, the first game, he really wasn't that bad. But it got overblown just because, hey, it's Milinkovic-Savic. People are expecting big things every single game. I think for me, the big issue of Savic going forward, I think he'll regain his form, and I think that's the issue. It's more, once he moves and leaves Lazio, what kind of team can he fit into? Because a lot of people say that maybe he can't work in just a midfield too. Long term, should he always be in a three? Because he's not the fastest. He's a bit clunky at times, but what he can bring when he's on his game, I mean, he's just one of those problem players, almost like our boy Marcos Alonso at Chelsea, you know, at left back. You have that of Savic, but with obviously a much bigger skill set in midfield. So hopefully he gets it right, but I think eventually people just need to realize that, you know, slow down a bit on Savic. He's very good, but this is not a guy that's going to be, you know, going to revolutionize football, are going to be a top three, top five player in the world.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there first with the price tag. Once someone gets that price tag, everybody assumes they have to be a top five player. Sometimes it's just all about projection. And as David talks about, sometimes it's all about just the team not wanting to lose that player. So they set a really high price tag because that might not necessarily be what they think they're worth, but they just don't want to lose the player. So there's a lot of things that go into, I think, Milinkovic-Savic. He's become a polarizing player to analyze. And I think CMs are kind of the trendy position these days in football. So anytime you have a CM prospect that looks good, it could be overblown. But that'll definitely be an interesting one to follow this season. There's no way he'll keep playing as badly as he has been. So let's move away from Serie A now, Thomas. Liverpool-PSG was definitely on paper the most attractive fixture this week, in my opinion. I think in many people's eyes, especially with the styles that they play. However, I'm now not as certain on the style that PSG necessarily play. On paper, they are a great team. You have a front three of Neymar, Cavani, Mbappe. You have Thiago Silva and all the players that they actually have. They're really one of the better teams on paper. However, it might just be on paper. They have loads of money. They're a massive team. But Thomas, I'm not the only one saying, I feel like something is missing. How would you, if you were Thomas Tuchel, or honestly, maybe you're not Thomas Tuchel and you're just in the higher-ups of PSG, how would you improve PSG?
I think two things, I think, right off the bat. One, might not be very popular. A lot of people are not big fans when others say this, but I think that PSG need a leader on the field. And I think, you know, you have Thiago Silva, whose history of being a leader is not is not the best. You know, he's been a captain a lot of the teams he's played, but I think they lack a leader. We saw that in the 6-1, you know, against Barcelona. We've seen that in a few games this season already. And, you know, because it just seems that even when they're winning, they sometimes just coast when things don't go well. They just need someone on the field. So that for me is number one. That might not be so popular of some people, but I think they really need that. I think number two is really just sorting out that midfield right now, because, you know, once Verratti didn't play. So, you know, you're missing a big player there. But for me, it seems at times that PSG's midfield is disjointed from their front three, and it's just like two separate units. And for me, if you can make them, if you can successfully transition from midfield to attack and have that midfielder who's able to link with the attack and do that more often, then they'll be fine. But the issue right now is Neymar is that guy. Neymar's the one who always drops deep. And while he likes to do that, you know, you can't have that every single game. And lastly, just as you were saying, Alex, in terms of PSG style, I was very surprised to hear Tuchel after the game saying, you know, talking about his players' effort and, you know, how good they looked. I thought they looked very poor, and I especially thought the front three with their pressing were horrendous. I mean, they let Liverpool just walk it out of the back and play it to the forwards. So overall, I think Tuchel will, you know, make sure at least the pressing aspect of it gets fixed and everyone's running for 90 minutes. But I think fixing that front three issue and maybe connecting to the midfield a little better, that's really what they need to do as soon as possible.
Yeah, you mentioned leader first and foremost, and I thought Gigi Buffon was a great acquisition, not even for what he can do in net. I just definitely thought he would already bring a presence to PSG that maybe they were lacking, some type of identity. I'm not saying that can't still happen, but I guess I thought with Gigi Buffon and Thiago Silva, who you mentioned has been a captain, but see, Thiago Silva is just a quiet guy, so he's not necessarily the captain that every team needs. But I thought maybe that combination of experience and leadership between Buffon and Thiago Silva, and then obviously the talent they have up front, I thought that would be all the identity they need. But I definitely agree that the front three still has some work to do, even though they're really damn talented. But in my opinion, also, their midfield is just lacking for the team that they are. I'm not as high on Marco Verratti as some others are, but nonetheless, even if you are high on Verratti, I feel like they need more help in the midfield. So let's move over to La Liga, and we're going to move over. I'm saying La Liga, but really it's also just Champions League giants. I'm going to pretty much ask you flat out, Thomas, who is a better team right now? And also just who do you think may do better in the Champions League, Real Madrid or Barcelona?
Real Madrid. I think when I want to go, first of all, when it goes to Champions League, until Real Madrid start losing, you know, until they lose a couple years in a row in the Champions League, I'm not picking against them. And I think that anyone who does would be foolish, because every year people pick against them and they keep proving people wrong. And obviously this year bigger than most because, you know, Ronaldo's not there, but I guess we'll see. But in terms of being a better team, Madrid obviously have lost Ronaldo, but as a team, they're incredibly similar to what they were last year, what they were when they won the Champions League. We've seen Ceballos actually getting more minutes now that he didn't get under Zidane, and he has looked good. Benzema's looking better than he did last season. Bale has looked absolutely incredible, like the player we all thought he would turn out to be. So hopefully he can stay healthy, and if he can, there's no reason he's not a top five, top maybe top three player in the world. That might be a bit of a push, but you know the way he's playing right now, he's carrying the team. And when he doesn't have to carry the team, other players can. So Real Madrid are just fine. When you look at Barca, I think Barca's depth now has improved a lot. You know, their depth over the years had been a bit of a problem. I think their problem right now, though, is still they're not a great team. You know, they still rely a lot on Lionel Messi. And, you know, who wouldn't rely on Lionel Messi if you have him on your team? But we saw in the Champions League this week, I thought they looked very, very poor. But, you know, Messi just turned it on, all of a sudden got a hat trick, and it seemed fine. But with Barcelona right now, they have to decide, you know, when they play the 4-3-3, which is what some fans, most fans want, and probably Valverde and the board want, they don't look that good. They don't have the players to play that system. Messi doesn't have the legs to play that system anymore. Then when they play the 4-4-2, it works better. You know, it's more suited to Champions League, I think, to big games, and they played it last season and worked really well in La Liga. But then fans don't like it very much, and Ousmane Dembele would have to probably play out of position there. So, yeah, it's a dilemma for Barcelona right now. I think Madrid have less problems. I think Madrid, some players have improved from last year, and I think overall Barcelona are still too reliant on Messi, whereas with Madrid, you have difference makers all across the board, more so than Barcelona.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I totally agree with your answer there. And I think you're a good team, at least when you have a great midfield, and Real Madrid certainly does. Now, obviously, they have talent all over the pitch, but when you have a midfield of Toni Kroos and Isco and Casemiro and Luka Modric, you are not going to be bad. And definitely, Barca is a much different team now. They do rely more on individual brilliance, as you said, from Messi, from Dembele, from Coutinho, from Suarez. I almost think that maybe they just need to go full on Pep Guardiola and just play all of their attacking players and just win games 5-3 right now. But I definitely agree, Real Madrid is the better team for sure. So This next question, I had to throw it in there. I'm kind of following David's style, where when he asks questions about movies and music, he does it towards the end of the interview. So I am sneaking in some Chelsea stuff here at the end of the interview. So if you're listening now and you don't want to hear about Chelsea, you can log off now. But this first question does involve Maurizio Sarri, so there definitely are Serie A ties. Thomas, you are a Chelsea fan as well, and that's not why I chose you to come on the podcast, but it certainly helps. Flat out, how impressed have you been with Maurizio Sarri at Chelsea so far?
I've been so impressed. I mean, words can't describe how impressed I am, how happy I am at the start of the season. And, you know, bar the one small negative that is, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi not playing as much as I thought he would, I have zero other complaints about Sarri. And I think the way he's approaching this season, a lot of people thought, you know, it's going to take a while for his style to settle in. Well, it really hasn't so far. And I think that, you know, once it starts to really gel in, I'm expecting good things from this team this season. I still think people shouldn't get ahead of themselves. You know, Chelsea are still not going to win the league this season. But Europa League is a very real possibility, and really instilling an identity will go a long way this season towards future seasons. And what better place to start than the two games against Liverpool next week, Alex? So that will be quite the test for Sarri and his team.
Yeah, totally. I've been so impressed. And yeah, I've said it a couple times now. I just didn't expect them to start off this well with a perfect start, because if anything, it's so hard to come in as a new manager and succeed right away. And then some people will say, well, Conte did it. Yes, but Conte was keeping a similar style to what they had been playing under Mourinho, in terms of it was more conservative than attacking. It's so tough to come into a team that's been playing more conservative for a handful of years, make an attacking team, and somehow have a perfect start. That speaks volumes to Sarri's mind. It also speaks volumes to the quality that Chelsea has. And this perfectly segues to the next question, Thomas. Clearly, the highest quality player on Chelsea is Eden Hazard. At this point, Hazard is off to a scorching start in the Premier League. He was, in my opinion, no disrespect to Luka Modric, he was the best player at the World Cup. So in my opinion, he is maybe on the best form in the world, maybe second best. In your opinion, is Eden Hazard in the conversation in your eyes as at least a top three player in the world right now?
He's certainly in the conversation. I think when we talk about number one and two, I think 99% of people will tell you that's a lock with Ronaldo and Messi, whatever order you prefer. For number three, you know, we have Hazard right now with the form he's in and with the football he's been playing, not just now, not just in the summer, also last season, for parts of last season, he's been terrific. And then you have Neymar and you have Mbappe. I think those are the three guys who fight for the number three spot. Obviously, you have the likes of Modric, Cruz, you know, Ramos, if you want to include a center back. But I think for me, attackers are the ones who really should, who make that difference and should be regarding the top three, top five player in the world discussion. And so for me, he is in the discussion, Alex. I think, unfortunately for me, Neymar is still above him, just for what we've seen Neymar do in terms of, you know, carrying a whole team by himself and also having the output to show it, which, you know, has always been a criticism of Hazard, where we've always defended him because he has a lot more output than people say. But I think Neymar is still a level above, and while he hasn't been as best this season, he will regain that, and I think he will be the guy who will fully take over from Messi and Ronaldo. But make no mistake, you know, really quickly, just I was telling a friend yesterday, I said, I almost feel like, as good as Hazard is and has been for Chelsea and all that he has done for Chelsea, I almost feel like, as a Chelsea fan and as a football fan, we lost a lot of his best years because he was playing under defensive managers. And not necessarily defensive, but not managers who like to dominate the game and have the ball. So we're seeing what he can do with Sarri right now. I remember me and you, we talked about how his finishing is very underrated. He just doesn't shoot enough. And we're seeing that right now, Alex. So if he keeps this up for the whole season, you know, or at least a level similar to this, then why not? Why not? You know, he could very well be a top three player in the world. He's still, I think, 27. So Chelsea can keep a hold of him playing like this. Whew, it's going to be a treat every week.
Amen. And that's my stance, is if you want to say Neymar is third best in the world right now, I will not argue with that. I will argue with that, actually. But what I'm saying is, you have full jurisdiction to say that. It is not at all asinine to say that. However, by the end of this year, I think it'll be clear, because of the reasons you mentioned, we really haven't seen Hazard with a manager that can bring out his full potential. I think by the end of the year, Hazard will be at least the consensus number three best player in the world, maybe higher. We have no idea what will happen with Ronaldo statistically at Juventus. But then again, I'll be a hypocrite if I say it's all about statistics, because I've been defending Hazard and saying it's not all about statistics. But nonetheless, I think, as you said, he's 27. We are just scratching the surface of what he could necessarily do under an attacking manager like Maurizio Sarri. And Sarri made a bold statement last week saying Hazard can score 30-plus goals, maybe even 40, which I think is a stretch. But what he's saying is he has the quality, as you said, to be a better goal scorer, because he's an underrated finisher, and he's going to be in better positions to finish. So as Chelsea fans, we are just so excited week in, week out to see what he can do. And so far, he's just been mesmerizing. So let's move away for this last question we always love, especially with our first-time guests, to just get a little background, tell us a little bit about how they kind of got into doing what they're doing, and not necessarily get their whole life story. But as I said at the top, you guys run a great account on Twitter, Everything Is Football. The handle is EIF Soccer, but don't worry, everybody listening in Europe, their account stands for Everything Is Football, not soccer. So no worries there. So Thomas, tell us just a little bit about the account, also a little bit about the podcast you do, and just a little bit about how it got started. I mentioned in the beginning, but just also a little bit about how this Twitter account came to be.
Yeah, so I think this was back in 2015, summer of 2015. Myself and Mark Geshen, who does the podcast with me for EIF, we argue about everything you can imagine when it comes to football. We disagree about every single thing. So we said, why not start a podcast? We did. This was 3 years ago. It eventually developed into a website, eventually developed into a Facebook page that grew really quickly. So we decided to move on to Twitter and found out that, wow, you know, Twitter is quite simply the best way to debate soccer. Apologies to America right now, to debate football, to debate football, in my opinion. So, you know, while, yeah, there's a lot of toxicity in so-called football Twitter, it's been for us just fantastic getting to know a lot of the accounts on football Twitter, getting to know you, you know, following David as well, and so many of the other accounts we've seen on football Twitter. So for us, what started as a podcast has moved into a full-fledged, you know, long-term project for us, and it's just really fun. So, you know, when you're talking about football, you know, how can it go wrong? Like, we could all talk about that all day, every day, pretty much.
Amen. It's just so addicting. And as you mentioned, football Twitter is so toxic. It is just so addicting. And I think if you've been on it long enough, like you and I, you know at least most of the time how to avoid the toxicity of it. But overall, who doesn't want to talk football? It's just an excuse to pretty much be a kid all day. And who doesn't want to do that? So once again, Thomas, I can't thank you enough for joining me on Couchland. Hopefully in the future, we'll have you back on again. Definitely once the Champions League gets rolling even more so, maybe you and I can talk Chelsea on the side. But nonetheless, thank you so much for joining me on Couchland. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Alex. And it's been a pleasure. And I'll be happy to have you on the EIF podcast next time. So all the best.